Good afternoon. I'm Adam Ragusea, and it's time for You to Ask the Mayor. Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan is here in the WFIU studios to talk about city issues of concern to you. Mr. Mayor, how are the streets out there?
You know, I want to thank the crews once again in city streets. They were out until about 3:30 in the morning. They were all coming in, and they're on call 24 hours a day, and we really appreciate it. They're great.
Well, the phone number is to call to speak with Mayor Cruzan about city streets or anything else you'd like is 877-285-9348, or the local call in the Bloomington area is 855-0811. If you prefer, you can send an email to mayor@indiana.edu, or you can instant message your questions and comments to screen name WFIU Mayor, all one word. Again, those phone numbers are 877-285-9348. And 855-0811. The email is mayor@indiana.edu, and the instant message screen name is WFIU Mayor. Now, Mr. Mayor, it's been so long since we talked to you and so much has happened.
There's a total lunar eclipse in a leap month, and it can mean only one thing, and that's that Fidel Castro will likely step down.
Well, that's not how I thought we were going to start this off.
No,
but,
go ahead.
Let's go back. Let's go back a little deeper in history to your State of the City address that was last month, and a number of accomplishments from your previous term that you had that you touted, and some goals that you had expressed for the upcoming term. And I want to play you a clip of something you said about the Beeline Trail. You'd mentioned that some funding for the Beeline had come through, and that phase one would soon be underway.
I hope that you share my strong belief that the dollars necessary to complete this project are a critical investment in the long-term strength of downtown and the larger community. Our first and foremost goal is to expedite the process of completing the trail to spur future investment in our downtown. I continue to believe that the Beeline will serve as this community's greatest economic development project.
And what precise development has occurred with the Beeline?
The state approved the phase one design plans and will let bids out, I believe it's April 2nd. And if the bids come back within, I believe it's 5% of the state's allowed costs, we'll be able to start construction on Memorial Day. Now, if the bids come back in excess of that 5%, we'll have to go back to the drawing board a little bit, and that could certainly delay things. But it's great news in that the plans have been approved, and we can move forward with construction. We hope beginning as soon as the Memorial Day time period and take about a year to complete.
Now we've
I should say the downtown phase. Phase one
sure,
is 2nd Street to Rogers Street, and that'll be the most heavily developed section in terms of full amenities, benches, lighting, in addition to just the basic trail itself.
What portion of the overall length of the project does that represent?
I think it's 1.6 miles, but I'm not sure. If somebody wants to text me from the office, that would be helpful. It's 3.1 mile total, and this is by far the most significant mm-hmm. section. The other two probably you're going to ask that next. I'll let you.
No, sure. I think we can actually we've got some callers on the line, and I want to get to their questions very quickly.
Sure.
But first, I want to play something for you. This is what City Councilman Whistler, the lone elected Republican in city government, told one of our reporters after your State of the City address regarding the Beeline Trail.
We need to have a little bit greater focus on individual jobs. I mean, the Beeline Trail will be a great economic development boost for the community, but it's not going to create it's not going to employ one single person that's getting laid off from GE. And we need to have a little bit we need to temper our long-term vision with some real short-term pragmatic solutions as well.
Now, you had said that you have called the Beeline Trail an economic development initiative. It's not just city beautification. Why do you view it that way?
Sure. And I hope you're going to play clips from the other 8 council members and not just the one. Because I think that's maybe the first time I've heard anybody object to the Beeline being a high priority like that. The project itself is going to spur – already has spurred economic development and interest from businesses that are wanting to locate along it. We've got the property owners, those who are seeking to become property owners along it. We're looking at development in terms of Wyhope senior housing and other retail that we hope will be locally owned and operated. CFC is interested. Obviously, they've acquired the Chase Bank right on the line. So I think it's extremely short-sighted to believe that there's not an economic development role. It certainly will create jobs. And we've already seen, even before the plans were approved, interest in developing along that line. We're going to also have, and that was part of the speech as well, a business development plan that will be used to try to promote economic vitality along the route of the line. And this line will stem all the way through neighborhoods into through the downtown and then back into neighborhoods on the other side. And we want to see it connect people to jobs that we think that we'll start to see, especially with the IU 12 acres being developed. And again, we're not sure what all will go in there, but there certainly will be a lot of job creation in that specific area. Right now, we see downtown is at, for the first time in quite a long time, downtown is at capacity on the square. We've got extremely high occupancy in all downtown retail, and now we're starting to see high occupancy in downtown residential. So we think that this all will meld together. I hope that BEAD, the Bloomington Entertainment and Arts District, will play a big part in this. And so I do continue to see the trail as being certainly an amenity in terms of quality of life, but also probably the city's greatest economic development project.
Well, we're definitely going to get back to those 12 IU acres and also the downtown occupancy rates,
okay,
because we've got a new report to talk about there. I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking to Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan here on WFIU's Ask the Mayor. Let's go to our first caller who's been waiting patiently on the line. Don, you're on WFIU with the mayor.
Yes, I guess one of the things that kind of humors me is that the talk is between IU and community about sustainability, and sometimes I just sort of have to chuckle at it. There was a recent letter to the editor regarding the light art thing in front of the museum, mm-hmm, on campus, and the astronomer basically pointed out the problems of light pollution, but for just dwarfing the issue of sustainability, sort of, you got to be kidding, it has to go to the various city softball facilities and the IU golf course driving range for lightening up the night sky. I mean, when you're flying in from Seymour and you can see those things glaring away, it really makes you wonder about sustainability and protecting the environment. I mean, the electricity comes from burning coal, and all the problems that come with it. And we're contributing to that, I think, with providing
through the light pollution,
That is coming from the community.
Well, we should mention that the light totem structure on campus is a temporary structure, I believe.
Yeah.
Not so much the Cascades Golf Course, which is, I think, what you're talking about. Mr. Mayor, have there ever been any discussions about putting in any kind of more energy-efficient lights on that golf course or anything along those lines?
Well,
that's university, though.
Yes,
that's university.
Say,
I'm
that's,
sorry.
That there may have been, but yeah, we're not part of that.
The apologies.
I think it's a legitimate question in terms of both of your questions in terms of alternatives that, and then I think you make a real valid point. I think it's all a matter of balance as to what our priorities are, and for some, I think it would be fair to say that there are those who would say they have an interest in being able to be involved. I think you mentioned the driving range, for instance, and it's looking for balances. What we have tried to do from the city perspective, now that wouldn't apply to any university function, is to have light pollution elements in our uniform development ordinance, the UDO, and in terms of new developments that come out. I think for me, just my own personal observation over the years of having lived here was even having driven between Indianapolis and Bloomington for so many years, and to see along Martinsville on 37 that at night, you know, it was extremely dark. Now, with all the car dealerships and all that are there, it's like you're, you know, part of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind scene where there's so much lighting going on. And it's clearly diminishing. If you go on the internet and just look up on Google a picture of Earth at night, and you'll see a map of the world and with all the lights on it. It is an amazing thing that we're doing to ourselves. I think it's just all a matter of balance. And the trail is a good example. And when the beeline is put in, public safety is going to be a component. And I am concerned about the lighting issues. We're making sure that we're having all the lights pointing down and I hope spread out far enough that it will minimize light pollution. At the same time, you've got the issue of public safety. So to me, looking for balance is key. But in the Midwest, in this, even in our own area, if you're interested in astronomy, and here's tonight as an example, we've got the total lunar eclipse. You know, having to drive someplace and find someplace out of town is more and more challenging, where you would have the ability to not have your view be obstructed by light.
Well, I'm an amateur astronomer as far as hobbies go. And in the 30-some years I've lived in Bloomington, the diminishing night sky is quite apparent. And the issue is not just the light pollution, but if we're lighting up the night so people can play softball to the wee hours of the morning, you're also burning fossil fuels and contributing to the diminishing of our resources. And it's kind of a real question to me is which should be a priority.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the call, Don. And Mr. Mayor, what do the city's existing ordinances governing lighting look like?
Well, they're mainly in terms – I don't think they're level of lighting as much as they are direction of lighting. But that's a good question. I'd have to be sure of that. I'm pretty confident that's where it's been headed. And I think Don makes a good point is that it is a matter of priorities and trying. And my point is trying to find a balance. I know that someone on the other side of that issue would say, "Well, so you want us to just stay in our house all night and have the lights off?" And I don't think that's what Don's suggesting at all. But it is looking for the balance. We do want to have the amenities available into evening hours. And I will say that I think one thing that has helped, although I know this will spark somebody being upset, is the daylight savings time.
And oh, don't even bring that up.
But it has certainly diminished our need for lighting later at night. And we've been able to adjust all of the tennis courts, golf courses, wherever, softball parks. We've been able to adjust and not have to have those lights burning as long.
We're speaking to Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan here on WFIU's Ask the Mayor, and we've got another 20 minutes or so of the mayor's time if you'd like to join the conversation, and we hope you will. You can call us at 877-285-9348 or 855-0811. You can send an email to mayor@indiana.edu or you can instant message at screen name WFIU Mayor. Velda, you're on the program with the mayor.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi,
I have
Velda.
A cold, so I hope you can understand
that's, me. I can fine. Thank you.
All the splendors of Bloomington are really almost denied to people who don't have transportation, especially on Sunday, say Saturday night and Sunday. And I'm still wondering if something isn't going to be done eventually about this problem.
Sure.
It seems like whatever bus is there is limited to a very small area of Bloomington, and I'm not sure it's really fair to the rest of us.
There has been a weekend route expansion recently, hasn't there?
Yes, and first of all, I hope you feel better. I think everybody seems to be going through some phase of it, and absolutely, this is an issue that Bloomington Transit hears about and is interested in attempting to solve, and they have done a weekend expansion. There will be more Sunday service. It still won't, on Saturday and Sunday, I don't believe, rise to the level of the service that you see during the weekday, in part because demand isn't there. And I think that, again, is a matter of looking for, we see a lot of discussion of having more mass transit, and I would love to see us have more in the way not only a bus but also in high-speed rail. Ultimately, it comes down to dollars and demand and our population, you know, some would argue doesn't won't, unless it's heavily subsidized, support the kind of bus system that I think would allow for full service on Saturdays and Sundays. But Bloomington Transit is very cognizant, and the board, transit board, very cognizant of people's desire, just like you mentioned, and is trying to expand and is headed that direction. I know on the weekends, and I hope beyond the hours that they currently will be serving.
Well, I have a suggestion.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people like to joyride on Sunday, and they're probably out-of-town tourists who would like to see more of Bloomington, too. Maybe something could be set up that people would actually pay a bit more, pay for this special service or something, if they could just get around.
Well, that may be, and they do market studies. I think part of the issue is people want that flexibility, and it almost goes back to Don's issue. It's a matter of priorities and balances, is where people are probably want the independence, and so for every customer, for every person, it would be a different different scenario.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate
but it's certainly worth looking into.
Well, okay. We appreciate the call, Velda. Thanks so much
for
phoning in, and feel better. Absolutely. We've got other folks waiting patiently on the line, but let's go to an email question. It says, I'd like to know if there is any initiative to create loading lanes in some of the more congested areas downtown. Trucks often dangerously park at intersections of busy streets, and I don't think this should be allowed.
Well, there has been – we have looked at that, especially, as I mentioned, in the downtown area. I'm noticing something I've not really seen that and as much as I have been lately, and that's trucks loading and unloading right at intersections, one in particular almost on a daily basis. And I'm sure everybody's got their own story, but at 7th and Walnut, where it's dangerous to be where the truck is all the way up into the intersection. And you can see people doing kind of 90-degree turns and to get around it. And so we've had there are limits. I think it's 15 minutes. There are limits as to how long you can load and unload. I believe all those delivery trucks, they want to move along as fast as they can. They're on a clock, and they want to move on to the next place. So I'm not worried about the fact that they're warehousing their trucks there. It all comes down to that we're trying to retrofit an existing downtown. And so if you're creating loading zones, you're likely eliminating parking spaces. We are limited in terms of we don't want to put loading zones next to fire hydrants and disabled spaces. So there are limits as to where you can do it. But and, of course, the store owners and the truck delivery people don't want to load any place other than right in front of their delivery point. And then you do end up with the issue of if their loading zone happens to be across the street and then they're wheeling their cargo across the street. Now you've added another safety element. So it certainly is being looked at. I don't think there's an easy solution, but we do have some loading zones already in town, and I think eventually we'll have to force them in some places where they might not fit very easily.
You'd have to eliminate some kind of on-street parking by doing so, correct?
Or a lane of traffic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Jennifer on the line. Jennifer, you're on WFIU with Mayor Krizan.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was listening to the comment about the lighting issue, and I read an article recently about lighting and safety that actually suggested that having bright lights on at night can be less safe because it creates pockets of darkness where you can't see anything.
Right.
And I know when I'm walking in Bryan Park at night, there's one light over by the pool that's really bright that actually makes it harder to see where I'm walking. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you are looking at current research on lighting.
Yeah. In fact, coincidentally, I'm a huge fan of the Rob Shakespeare
light totem.
I just think it's fantastic. And I know that it does it. It does. You know, it points up into the air. And again, I think it's trade-offs and balance. And to me, the addition to quality of life way over shadows, no pun intended, the downside. You've hit on exactly the issue. And the reason I say it's kind of ironic that his name came up is because we consulted with him through Parks and Recreation about the very issue you're talking about. When you have a series of lighting, you can create pockets of darkness. And so we were especially looking at the Beeline, not wanting that to happen, is that you don't want to have – you want to have some overlap. The question is when you start to overlap, then how much are you creating so much lighting that it looks – I get the worry that it looks like a landing strip at some point. I don't know about the – I understand what you mean about a bright light, and we'll take a look at if you can even let us know in Bryant Park which one in particular. But sometimes it's because it's not shaded on the sides and the light's not pointing down. And, of course, if it's pointing down, then you get to that danger of creating those pockets of darkness. So, again, it's a matter of – but I would like the city to start to consult more with – there are lighting experts out there. Yeah. Rob happens to be one of them. And address these kind of issues. And this, a lot of this would be having to retrofit what we've already got. But for the Beeline in particular, there will be lighting that I think we can do properly, and it's and hitting on exactly the kind of suggestion that you're making, is that we'd be cognizant of the fact you can create pockets of darkness. And it seems almost counterintuitive to say lighting can cause a problem, but it can.
Well, our eyes adjust to darkness. So if we have lower intensity light,
sure, yeah,
we're better able to see.
All our night vision isn't what it used to be. Thanks for the very thoughtful
Thank
call,
you.
Jennifer.
Okay, thanks a lot.
While we're on the subject of energy and sustainability, let's talk about the Evergreen Village. We had the first tenants move into phase one of the Evergreen Village, houses selling at prices around $125,000, $145,000. Of course, the residents are not going to be paying those complete prices. There will be a second mortgage that the city will be picking up. Is this an economically sustainable way for the city to undertake its public housing operations?
I understand the question. It's not this is one part of our kind of public housing. There are a lot of other affordable housing projects that we work on, and mostly, and I think that you'll see by far the highest percentage of cases will be partnering with the private sector or with nonprofits like Habitat, South Central Community Action Program, and now I've started this list. I'll be sorry I left somebody off. But this is something that was absolutely for our area, a first of a kind, and there are costs that are higher than what could be, I think, afforded in the long run. But we have to do it to find out how to do it better. And in this case, this is also an issue, kind of going back to some of the other callers here, in terms of sustainability. These are highly energy efficient homes, and we hope the long-term ownership cost of these homes will be much lower than what they might have been otherwise. Of course, making them more energy efficient also added to the overall cost. So I think this is, again, I hate to use the word experiment because it has been done elsewhere, but for us it's certainly a first, and it's something we'll learn. I don't see that this is the pattern that you'll see the city adopt as its way of creating affordable housing. It's not even near the highest percentage of the way in which we do business now, and it never will be.
Here's coincidentally an email that is also about the Evergreen Village project, and it says, is the subprime mess causing any problem for city financial operations such as Evergreen Village, as was the case for some government agencies in Florida?
I don't believe – and again, I'm getting text messages here, but I don't believe it's been any problem for us. It has been a problem for other homeowners, certainly in not only our county but in the region. We're seeing very high defaults, and we have a housing counseling available through our Housing and Neighborhood Development Program. And by the way, if anyone's listening and is interested in assistance, just look up City of Bloomington Housing and Neighborhood Development Hand, or call my office 349-3406, and we'll get you set up. But we're seeing a spike in those in need and losing their homes because of that issue. I don't believe it's affected us as a city government.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Susan on line one. Susan, you're on the show.
Hi there. How are you? I live in Brown County, but I recently traveled to China, and I was very interested in some of the things I saw there that maybe we can learn about conserving electricity. I'm not sure what their motives were, but I think they're great practices. One of them was when I was in the city staying in a hotel, I noticed that at a certain time at night, all the lights from the stores went off, all the big store signs and everything. You know, I would say it was probably around midnight. And then another thing I noticed was in all the hotels where they had the – everywhere I stayed at least had the credit card type door keys. There was a place in the room right next to the door that you kept that, and as you go out the door, you take it with you, and all the electric lights in the room go off automatically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it made it so hotel guests can't just leave and leave all their lights on while they're gone all day or all night or whatever.
Well, thanks for sharing that experience with us. This seems to go towards something that one of the newest city council members, Council Member Piedmont, had mentioned in part of her campaign, which was enforcing a LEED certification standard for all city buildings. That could feed into the kinds of things that Susan is talking about.
Right.
And right.
Then there was one more thing, if there's mm-hmm. time.
Go ahead, Susan.
Okay. When we were on the freeways or highways or whatever you want to call them, when we got picked up at the airport and were being taken into the city, we finally noticed that the driver kept shifting his lights to bright, and it finally occurred to me, none of the big overhead signs at the intersections along the freeways were lit up, and people just simply turned their bright lights on and looked at the signs, and then they turned them down lower when they didn't need them. And so all that lighting that sits in the countryside when nobody's around is not being wasted.
Well, and again, it's funny you mentioned China because Steve Ashkin, who is a member of our local sustainability commission, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, has done business there in terms of greening their cleaning operations. Is something he does in his profession, and has talked about China's great interest in trying to address now, obviously, environmental public health issues that are occurring there with their industrialization, but also it does come down to money and attempting to save not only in terms for environmental purposes or energy, but in terms of cost savings. We are, as Adam mentioned, Isabel and Dave Rollo, others have been working on a green building ordinance. I think Andy Ruff may be working on that as well. Something that we're interested in, especially for our future developments for city government buildings. We certainly, even though there wasn't a green building ordinance, lived up to what its standards would be when we developed the new utilities building. And Evergreen, I think, again, is a great project where energy efficiency was front and center. We've also established a Team Green within the city. Every department of the city has a representative on it, and we are doing things. And again, in some ways it sounds so small, but when you start to add up how many different rooms there are, how many different entities there are, and if we can do this for other businesses in the future, every little bit makes up just a huge difference. And for us, it's what you said. It's rooms and common rooms in City Hall where the lights now go off if it doesn't detect any motion after a certain number of minutes. And we're also going to be doing energy audits within city government, and we hope to be promoting it within the private sector as well.
Thanks so much for the call, Susan. We have just a minute left of your time. Mr. Mayor, I have one more question, which is that we got our first look at this new annual report from Downtown Bloomington Incorporated. The Herald Times did a piece with the delicious pun headline, Blooming on the Square, indicating that the occupancy rates in downtown Bloomington are very, very high. I imagine it's right where you'd like to see it, but is the diversity of those businesses the way you would like to see it at this point?
At businesses, yes. In terms of a very certainly, it's far and away more locally owner operated. Where I feel like we are lacking in diversification is in our residential, and I don't think it comes as a huge surprise. But when you look at Smallwood and other student housing complexes, where we're going to have at 11th and Morton, the old Stevens Olds Honda site, hundreds of more students coming in. We are trying to promote owner-occupied condominiums and senior housing to start to get a balance in the demographics.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor, for taking the time to speak with us, and thanks for all of our callers. This has been Ask the Mayor with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. Join us next week. Kokomo Mayor Greg Goodnight will be our guest. I'm Adam Ragusa. Thanks for listening.